This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
And Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, it is a throwback Thursday. We're going back to 1956. Don Larson's perfect game as the Yankees beat the Dodgers 2-0, game 5 of the World Series, and go on to win it in 7. I got a little throwback Thursday for you to describe what's currently going on with the Yankees today. When I was a child, there was a made-for-television movie about Gilligan's Island, and it was the Harlem Globetrotters and Gilligan's Island. And basically the plot was that there was a guy, then he challenged the castaways who had built a resort on the island to a game of basketball and wanted to take over the island, whatever. But they used the Harlem Globetrotters, and they were going up against robots. And the Globetrotters tried to play straight-up basketball, and they couldn't play straight-up basketball because the robots were beating them in straight-up basketball. But the professor figured out that if they just went back to their strength, if they just went back to doing what they did, which was be the Globetrotters, they would beat the robots and save the island. So that's exactly what they did. Well, that's not what the Yankees are doing. The Yankees aren't playing to their strengths. The Yankees aren't doing what got them there in the first place. This situation with David Garcia, in which they used him in Game 2, as a opener to then bring in J.A. Happ, has now thwarted them as they lost Game 3, as Masahiro Tanaka has struggled, and now find themselves in a must-win situation tonight against a team that just constantly beats them every time they hit the diamond. So where do the Yankees, the mighty, mighty, mighty Yankees, who do they have to turn to tonight to save their season? Jarrett Montgomery, who has never pitched in the postseason before. Now, David Garcia is 21. He's never pitched in the postseason before either. But he might have given the Yankees that sort of spark. But instead, he's trotted out there as some sort of, ooh, we're going to play your game, Tampa Bay. Don't you do this opener thing? And now the Rays are like, yeah, sometimes, and then sometimes we don't, and then sometimes we blast 4 home runs and beat you. Which is exactly what they're doing in this series. Aaron Boone just didn't play Yankee baseball. What got them there? How they went about the season. And now he finds himself about ready to lose the island. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sportsmap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sportsmap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Brought to you by Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots. Sustained energy without the sugar, jitters, or crash. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, good, bad, and the dumb on a throwback Thursday. You can't get any better than a throwback Thursday, but we might with the good of the day. What is the good of the day today?
Well, this show has 2 favorite golfers.
Yes.
One is Phil.
One is Phil.
And the other one is John Daly.
That's right. We love John Daly.
We do love John Daly. And this good of the day is all about John Daly. John Daly is playing in was playing at a Pro-Am charity golf tournament that benefited fallen Navy SEALs.
Yep.
He stepped up to the par 3 11th hole, which is about 121 yards long from the white tees.
Mm-hmm.
Barefoot. Can you guess what he what happened when he pulled out his wedge?
A hole in one?
A hole in one.
Awesome.
A guy got it on videotape. You couldn't believe he got it on videotape. John Daly, this is where I love John Daly the most. He didn't really celebrate. It was just kind of more matter of fact that that's what he was going to do.
Yeah, that's what I see these pro golfers do all the time. They hit a hole in one. They go, "No, all right."
Everyone around him started cheering him, and then he got it. Then he, you know, he felt the fever of the crowd around him. Got a little excited, turned and went, and he said this just before he noticed the camera. So he stopped short. I have 11 of those mother, and he stopped right there.
That's the best. Like, you get to a point where you've had multiple hole-in-ones right. in your life. You're just like, this is what I do. It's what I do. I'm a professional golfer. I hit the ball as close to the hole as possible, and sometimes they go in. And I do this a lot more than you do, so I have a lot more chances at doing this than you do.
Right.
I'm playing golf every day. That's awesome. Like, I remember, like, 5 years ago, I was playing, and I had a 97-yard wedge shot on a par five, and I hit it in the hole for an eagle. It's the best shot I've ever hit. And I lost my mind, and that was an eagle. That was just an eagle. It wasn't a hole-in-one. I've never had a hole-in-one. I think I'd go crazy if I had a hole-in-one.
And this guy's got
11. I'm not trying to compare myself to a pro golfer, by the way, but it's the idea that he has 11 of something I probably will never have in my life.
I remember my grandfather hit one, and thank God there were witnesses.
Yeah, right?
Because,
that's the other thing.
Because what he did afterwards, not only did he frame the scorecard of that day, he had all his buddies sign it.
That's awesome.
And then he made a plaque. He made a little stand for the ball. I mean, there was a shrine to that hole-in-one. And, you know, I mean, yeah, this was a guy, like, after when he retired, he played golf at least 2 to 3 times a week.
And never got another one?
They never got another one, no.
Yeah.
No. Exactly. My cousin and I, we used to go golfing with him, but we didn't really enjoy it too much because he always made us walk.
Yeah, they like to go like, get out there and like
we're
get
under
their exercise.
16. We're under 16. The only kind of driving we can do is outside of amusement park, outside of like Autotopia.
That's right.
Autotopia at Disneyland is a golf cart.
You got to drive the golf cart.
Yeah,
exactly.
He wouldn't let us do it.
The first round of golf my father ever took me on, Dustin's Golf Course in New Hampshire, second hole, par three, the guys ahead of us made a hole in one. And I thought, oh, that's easy. It must happen all the time. I didn't realize how very, very rare they are. I was a kid, but still, as I get older.
Yeah.
So good for John Daly. Yeah. Good for John Daly.
And just
that's
a comment. I mean, just, you know, just the with cigar in hand, too.
Oh, it's even better.
I mean, just turns to the camera and goes, I have 11 of those, mother. And then notice that there's a camera rolling and just stop
What do they say in sports? Right? Act like you've been there before?
Exactly.
He acted like he'd been there before.
Yep.
Love John Daly.
This is a nice soft touch on the ball.
What is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, it's not one of our traditional bads.
Okay.
It's more bad news for the Heat.
Yeah, well, okay. Give it to me.
They're facing elimination tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what do the Lakers decide to do? They're bringing out the Mamba jersey.
They are bringing back the Mamba jersey.
So
yeah.
This means, hey, you know, it's all or nothing. Now, they are planning on bringing it out for Game 7. If there is a Game 7, they won't wear it for Game 6. But, yep, tomorrow night, Mamba jersey.
Mamba jersey is trying to close out this series and win it. Their 17th championship, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's number 17.
I think it's 17.
If I'm not mistaken. I'll have to look it up, but I think it's 17. And, I know that's bad for the Heat.
It's bad for the Heat because they don't need a chip, but they're playing with the chip now.
Exactly.
And that's all that matters. It's like, you know, they're going to throw those unis on and then everyone's going to be looking at each other going, yeah, we can't lose tonight.
Do you think
tonight.
The NBA, this is an interesting little quick, because I just went on a rant how ratings don't matter. But if you're the NBA, it doesn't matter to you, but it might matter to them. Do they just wish that this would be done and everybody go home and wrap up the bubble? Or do you think they want this series extended?
I don't think they want this series extended. I think my conspiracy theory was that the NBA wanted the Heat to win one because of the way it was laid out.
Right, right.
Because had it been a sweep, what game? That would have been Monday. When did the Lakers play last? Was that Sunday night?
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, it was when they played the last
game. Yeah, no one's going to watch Tuesday, but you have a Friday night event where nothing else is going on.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, this is something like, you know, they're probably saying, yeah, well, let's look at the logistics. You know, Tuesday night, not many people are going to want to watch. Not many. It's Tuesday. You know,
normal circumstances in June, you might want a 6-game series if you're the NBA. But
of course,
if you're in this bubble for 3 months and you're like, God, let's get out of here. Let's wrap this up.
There was one guy. He's an NBA producer who held up a card and you know, people were taking his photo. He has been in the bubble for 100 days.
Oh, man. That's
and he was holding up a card that just said 100. And I just looked at him like, that's awesome, but that is, God, that has got to be hard.
Exactly.
I hope he's single. I hope he doesn't have a family. Because He may not have one when he goes back.
Yeah, well, exactly. And if they ever plan a vacation to Disney World, he might go, no, I'm very
good. Maybe not, because he hasn't been able to go to the park.
To Disney World, right. But maybe that whole environment is just going to bring back these quarantine flashbacks.
I mean, imagine if you or I got, you know, we're blessed enough to go cover the NBA, but we were stuck there for 100 days. What would our family say to us?
Yeah, good point.
I mean, we couldn't come home and just be like, hey. Yeah, it was tough. It was a long, grueling time.
Right,
you know, 100 days in a hotel room by myself.
In a 5-star hotel room.
Yeah.
But I don't know where the production people are staying.
That's true.
They better not be staying at like All-Star Sports or something like that. One of the value hotels.
Right.
They should be staying in one of the nicer places, because the nicer hotels were the ones that were quarantine approved. So everybody that's in this bubble
The NBA should help them out.
Yeah. I think the three hotels that were on the list, I think everybody who's in there probably stays there because they were like, okay, these three.
Yeah, everyone who's in the bubble.
In. Right. Everyone who's in the bubble gets to stay here.
Reporters, writers.
Yeah. You're not going to be mingling with the crowd that's coming in when we open. You stay here.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is, I think he's a country singer. Country singer Morgan Wallen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think he is. My daughter likes him.
Yeah. Well, he was set to perform on Saturday Night Live this week.
Was he?
And Saturday Night Live pulled the plug.
Why?
Because he wasn't following COVID-19 protocols.
Oh, okay. He didn't tweet something positive about Trump or something about.
No.
We can't have you on the stage.
They don't care about that. They probably do. They'll just make fun of it. But what they do care about is the amount of TikTok videos that surfaced of Morgan Wallen partying it up with University of Alabama girls.
Oh, very nice.
Now, when I say partying with University of Alabama girls, he was at a party at the University of Alabama. I don't know how many he kissed or made out with or, you know, had fun with, but the answer is a lot.
So he's a popular guy.
Well, I mean, he's a single young country artist that all these girls probably know.
Yeah.
Probably gravitated towards him saying, hey, I'm going to be the one that sweeps him off his feet.
Right, sure.
And you know,
I looked him up. He's 27.
He's 27, hanging out with a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah. All right. Why not? Yeah. You got to do what you got to do.
Because of that, SNL said, no, we can't have you be a part of this, because they're trying to, you know, a lot of these people, they're trying to do everything they possibly can to keep a product on. And Saturday Night Live is saying, you know, we did the virtual Saturday Night Live. It was fun, but then, you know, no one started watching because what kind of skits can you do over and over again that's just virtual?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And so, you know, they're back to traditional. And from what I've heard, too, is they are paying their audience members a little bit to come and watch.
Well, how nice is that?
Yeah, that's almost treating them as cast members
nice,
in a way.
Nice.
So you're getting a little check to
very
come, because I don't know if they were able to get people to show up. So it's like, hey, we got to pay you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, this
poor
is...
Poor Morgan Wallen, then. He's not going to be on Saturday Night Live.
This is, you know, for a lot of people, this is a huge, huge thing. It could be a breakout moment. I mean, I think he's already broken out, if that's the term used.
I know his... I looked up his songs. I know his songs, but I didn't know him. He's Whiskey Glasses, I know. Up, Down, I know. And Chasing You, I know.
There you go. So,
I know those three songs, but I didn't know he did them.
Yep. But now you won't see him perform live, though, this Saturday.
That's right. That's too bad. Well,
he'll probably be at another college party.
He had a good time with the Alabama coach.
He looked like he was having a good time.
Sure.
I'm sure he was.
I'm sure he was too.
I'm sure he's sitting there like, that's a bummer. They'll probably invite me back when this is all over.
Right.
And we can make a big joke about me having my fun at the university. Because there was a report earlier in the week about, you know, it's like, some young Karens, I should say. Young Karens taken to social media complaining about the fact that Morgan Wallen is at a college party and he's hooking up with this girl and hooking up with that girl. They're like, oh, he's so much older than them.
Well, yeah, but not really.
Not really.
I mean, he's 27. He's probably 22.
And let's be honest with ourselves. If we were 27, single, and, you know, had a hit song on the top of the charts, we'd be doing the same exact thing.
We'd probably be doing the exact same thing. Exactly.
We know that. We know where young Karens are being built then.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb, brought to you by Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots, giving you sustained energy without the sugar jitters or crash. The secret, the all-natural ingredient, DBHB, powerful ingredient that revs up your metabolism, turns your body into a fat-burning machine in only minutes. When I take it, it feels wonderful because I get the energized feeling, and again, without the crash, the jitters, or the, you know, the sustained energy without the sugar. That's Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots as we continue its wake-up call.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1956 on a Throwback Thursday, Don Larson's Perfect Game. Remember they used to sing this on Happy Days?
Yeah.
Might have been one episode of that, but still.
But it just feels like it was on every episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Need a replacement part or tool for your repair, maintenance, or restoration project? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They know what it takes to get the job done right the first time. In fact, professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Stop by and talk to one of the professional parts people today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Michael on Twitter, unfortunately, the Lakers will finally reach the Celtics in championships at 17. The Celtics
had
a monster.
Why is that unfortunate, Michael?
Yeah, why is that unfortunate, Michael?
What's your beef?
Celtics had a monster lead 40 years ago. That's true.
We've just been slowly chipping away at it. We gave you 10 years to make up for it.
That's right. That's right.
And you couldn't.
Like I said yesterday, the Lakers are one of those remarkable organizations. They just don't disappear that long. They eventually come back. You might have to put up with a few, maybe a decade, maybe a little less than that. But they eventually come roaring back in some capacity. And that, you know what, that just builds on, you know who used to be like that was Notre Dame. Like Notre Dame used to be like that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, not so much anymore. You know, you used to have the pipeline, all the Catholic schools, they'd all pipe you know, the football players from those schools would pipe you into Notre Dame. And now not so much. It's just kind of spread out. And there really isn't a program. I mean, maybe USC has popped, you know, has popped up, popped down, popped up, popped down. But, you know, the Lakers are just, again, you talk about from at least in my lifetime, the early 80s on, there just isn't a big, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, probably from 2010, the last championship, until now, 10-year period, probably one of their longest drought in the 40-year period that they've had without being a decent force in the NBA. But they do it because, again, they eventually land the player that does it for them, right? Whether it's Magic, whether it's Kobe, Shaq, whether it's LeBron, they eventually find the guy that leads them to where they want to be. So that's what we're going to get on Friday night. But again, you know, if it does come to an end on Friday night, the Lakers are the champions. I think you got to give the hats off to the NBA for this experiment. Unlike the NFL, which is about ready to lose another game if this Titans story gets worse and worse. Tennessee got two more players tested positive for the coronavirus. They had their game postponed with the Steelers, and now it looks like the Buffalo Bills are scheduled to come into town to play the Titans on Sunday. That game might be in jeopardy. What do we do now? What do we do? Like,
if they have to postpone their game again?
Yeah, I mean, do we just, I mean, didn't, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there not a sort of built-in buffer in the schedule for these sort of makeup games?
Well, I think the plan was, I mean, if everything went well, it was just going to be routine as normal. But right. There have been rumors or talks about pushing the Super Bowl back or pushing the whole postseason back.
See, I kind of thought when the NFL was talking about coming back that there was a flexibility in the postseason.
There's no way you can end a season with a team with one less victory. Unless they're completely out of it, right?
Well, that's a great question. And it's kind of leading me into this point. Does the NFL have to convince the fan base that we may have to do this on an uneven schedule? Or is it because 16 games matter so much that that's really an impossibility?
Why not? But did we care that the Cardinals played two less games?
Right. Well, no, we did in baseball.
In baseball.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Not football. Sorry.
No, we did.
Forgot
no.
There were two Cardinals.
Right. But no, that's a, yeah, because, and the same thing in the NBA, if for some reason, and they got all the regular season games that they wanted to get in, but let's just say one of the regular season games was postponed for whatever reason. I don't think people would have gone crazy in the NBA. It's like, well, this team played eight and this one team had to play, these two teams had to play seven because their one game that was Tuesday got postponed for whatever reason. Does the NFL have to do that? Because if this happens again for the Titans, what do they do? We talked about this with the Steelers last week, which was if you're going to move it to the bye week. Well, what they did was, just to, in case you didn't know, with the Steelers was they moved the game to the week seven, which was the Titans' bye week. And then because the Ravens and the Steelers, which was a week seven game, both of those teams had a week eight bye, they moved that game to week eight. So the Steelers now go Titans, Ravens, and the Titans don't get their bye week at week seven. They're going to play the Steelers. But now you've run out of wiggle room. Because if the Bills game has to be postponed and you can't play it on Monday,
you got to push the season back.
You've got to accommodate this.
And do you just do this? Do you say, okay, you know, we're going to push it back a week for all those teams that didn't get their game in? What would that be? Week 18,
right?
You get the week 18 weekend. So maybe there's only one game. Maybe there's three. I don't know.
And here's the domino effect that occurs because the Titans got the game with the Steelers postponed. To week seven, and now the Steelers and the Ravens have lost that bye week to week eight. Now, the Ravens have to get a bye week somewhere because their week eight bye week is now being, it has to be opened up. Maybe it's week seven. I don't know. What do they do? But at the same time, the Steelers are not in a position to lose a game.
No.
To COVID. So there's this trickle-down effect that occurs because and the same thing with the Bills. Like, the Bills may not be in a position to move their bye week. They may have a bye week, but this game against the Titans, it may have to be rescheduled at some point, and they may not be able to, if they lose another game. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, there's a domino effect that's occurring here, all to preserve a 16-game schedule that the NFL may have to turn to its fan base and go, yeah, some of these teams are going to get 14 in, and that's just the way it's going to have to be. Sorry.
I mean, it's going to have to be. Because, I mean, you know, we're talking about the Titans. Oh, you know, if the Titans may be missing a game, it depends on whether or not they're relevant. The Bills look like they're going to be relevant at the end of the year.
Sure.
And having one game less could mean the difference between AFC East Championship, a number one seed versus a number two seed or three seed. I mean, there's a lot on the line for that.
That's exactly. And I think that's where the NFL has to start going, okay, look, there's got to be some contingency plans here about either the flexibility of the postseason so we can get everybody into a 16-game schedule. Because, again, they don't have the luxury of what baseball had, which is, look, you could lose two. I mean, the Cardinals lost 2.5 weeks and were three short of completing the 60-game schedule, or two short, because they were just like, we're doubling you up the rest of the way. Like, you're getting a whole bunch of seven-inning doubleheaders. And the NFL, unfortunately, can't do that. So the NFL has to do it.
Yeah, or we just do it.
We just do it.
You know, I loved your analogy yesterday where you said, hey, Derrick Henry, great 120-yard performance. You got another one in you. We got a game in 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So 2 hours when you face the Bears, a fresh Bears team, are you ready?
The Bears haven't played two games yet. So.
Exactly. Hey, with football, basketball, and baseball back, it means it's time to get down your bets. And BetUS.com is the best because they've got the longevity that you're looking for, integrity. You need to know you're going to get paid. They're the pioneer in online betting, more than 25 years in the biz. Plus, they've got everything that you're looking for. Live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, entertainment, all kinds of crazy prop bets. To get started, 1-800-MY-BETUS. That's 1-800-MY-BETUS. They'll walk you through the process. Or simply go to BetUS.com, fill out the information. It only takes a minute. When you get to the how did you hear about us box, type in radio and you can get up to 150% in bonuses on your first deposit. 1-800-MY-BETUS or BETUS.com. Get that 150% bonus by mentioning radio in the how did you hear about us box. Go with the best. That's BetUS.com. All right, we'll talk some college football coming up next as we continue along. The big game, there's a Texas-Oklahoma. There's also Tennessee-Georgia. Notre Dame and Florida State may not pack the same amount of punch. Chris Vanini of The Athletic will join us next.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony V and Ron Culver.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1956, Don Larson's Perfect Game. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to the Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. Chris Vanini joins us from The Athletic to talk some college football. How are you? Did I get your last name right?
Vanini.
All right. As we head in, a couple of games under the belt for the SEC, for example. Let's start with them. It's hard to make proclamations on where certain teams are, but Georgia and Tennessee has got a lot of intrigue now, as Tennessee has won 8 in a row going back to last season. Are you buying the Volunteers? How are they looking in 2022 games in?
They're looking improved. You know, that's what we've seen under Jeremy Pruitt with them, is that they continue to get better. The quarterback play is a little bit better. The defense is a little bit better. They needed a kind of a fluky punt thing to hold on against South Carolina, but then they handled Missouri. You know, they've won SEC games by multiple scores over this 8-game winning streak, something they hadn't really done for quite a while. So they continue to get better. Is that good enough to go into Athens and beat Georgia? We're going to find out.
Yeah, in terms of what Georgia did to Auburn, how much of that was what Georgia does defensively, and how much of it was what Auburn just struggled to do offensively on their own?
I think you have to give a lot of credit to Georgia, because, I mean, you remember that first game against Arkansas, and Georgia didn't look great. You know, they offensively they struggled for a while, defensively they were okay, but it took them a while to kind of pull away. But then you see Arkansas goes and beats Mississippi State the next week. So maybe Arkansas is a lot better than we thought. And then Georgia kind of handles its way against Auburn. So you got to give a lot of credit to Georgia. That defense still remains one of the best in the country. They're going to shut down the run first. It's what they always want to do. So Georgia looks like the team now that we thought coming into the season.
What is your thought process as you cover college football this year and all of the different scenarios in which we've got in place, conference-only games, one non-conference game for some? When you look at a conference like the SEC that's just staying within itself, playing only conference games, as schedules then got harder, for how much wiggle room do you give teams in terms of where they're put in the standings or how good they really are as we progress in the season and the schedule is tougher?
Yeah, I think you have to give them some wiggle room. I mean, look at a team like Kentucky. They go to Auburn and they nearly beat the Tigers, a game that was close until the fourth quarter. They play Ole Miss and they lose because they miss an extra point in overtime. That's a team that's sitting at 0-2, but they're not far from being 2-0, and that only adds to the depth of the conference. You look at an Arkansas, like I said, they beat Mississippi State and play well against Georgia. Some of these teams that are typically in the lower or middle tiers might be better than we thought. And then you throw in the Georgias and Alabamas, and you're going to have to give all of these teams a little bit of leeway. That the question is, and the question I had coming into the season was, is the SEC going to beat itself up too much?
Right.
And put itself up in a tough spot for the playoffs. We've got Alabama-Georgia in a couple weeks. Now that game was already on the schedule. It wasn't an added game, but when you have all these conference games against each other, there's going to be more losses just by math than you would have had otherwise. And is that going to be enough for one or two teams to stand tall at the end and be able to be in the playoff? We'll have to see.
Let's go to the Big 12 Red River Showdown this weekend in Texas and Oklahoma. It's one of the historic rivalries in the sport, but both are coming off losses. And in Oklahoma's case, two straight. What is ailing the Sooners in these two conference losses?
They're just, their quarterback play is not Heisman worthy, for one, which has been for three straight years.
Right. I mean, what a bar.
Rattler's been good. He just hasn't been that good. And the defense has clearly taken a step back compared to the step up they made a year ago. But you also got to remember, so they lose to Kansas State and Iowa State. Those are teams that have given Oklahoma fits for a while. Kansas State beat Oklahoma last year. Iowa State beat Oklahoma a few years ago and needed a two-point conversion stop for Oklahoma to win, I think, last year. So those were already two teams that gave Oklahoma trouble. But when you have those early in the season and you have them as both losses, suddenly we see Oklahoma lose two straight games. They hadn't done that since 1999, Bob Stoops' first year.
Right.
So now you're kind of, I don't want to say panic mode, but if you lose this game to Texas, then we're in kind of territory for Oklahoma we haven't seen in decades.
Let's go to Clemson and Miami. What is it about the Hurricanes? We know Clemson. We got an idea about them. Here comes Miami. Derek King, for we might remember him when he played for Houston. What is it about the Hurricanes in these three games that they have played that sort of closes the gap with what Clemson has had to offer?
Well, Miami might be able to run the ball. That's the biggest question I have. Cameron Harris, the running back. Derek King, the quarterback. I want to see if Miami can move the ball on the ground, because in their first three games, they really have done that. Miami's defensive line has been good. We expect the defense to be pretty good like it has, but I want to see if Miami's going to be able to run the ball against a defensive line like Clemson.
Florida State and Notre Dame. I'm old enough to remember when this game used to matter. It was a big deal. It's not so much anymore with Florida State struggling and under a new head coach, but Notre Dame at 5, two games into the season, what do we know about the Irish?
You know, I have them in that top tier of teams. I think there's maybe 5 or 6 teams right now that look like the top group. I put Miami in there right now as well. When you get kind of outside the top 6, then you don't really know what you have. I mean, Notre Dame, they're a team that's going to contend for the playoffs like they do most years. Ian Book hasn't looked as sharp as we thought, but, you know, I don't think they'll have any trouble with Florida State here. And I expect Notre Dame to handle it pretty well.
Let's go to the other team in Florida, the Gators. They're ranked 4th. They've had 2 good wins on their schedule already, and they go play Texas A&M. Dan Mullen showed what this team was going to be doing, look like with Kyle Trask last year. Looks like he's got it going again this year. What do you know? What do you like about the Gators? And what can Texas A&M do in College Station?
Yeah, I think this team is going to score a lot of points all season, and I expect them to do it Saturday. I mean, Kyle Pitts already has, I think, 6 touchdowns through 2 games, the tight end for Florida. Really good player. This is the offense that Dan Mullen was always trying to build there. I do have maybe some concern about the defense, given the amount of points Florida has given up in 2 weeks to South Carolina and to Ole Miss. So that's kind of my biggest question. I think Florida should win this game. I don't have a lot of faith in Texas A&M right now, but I'm curious to see if A&M is able to move the ball against that Florida defense.
Chris, I want to ask you, just as a general college football guy that's kind of navigating new waters here, with games being postponed and the schedule kind of being thwarted, has it been more difficult to evaluate where teams really are, given where we were in the offseason and some uncertainty about this season? Or how have you progressed as we're like a couple of weeks in? How have you been able to evaluate what you're seeing so far?
Oh, yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's tough. I rank every team. Normally, I rank all 130 teams every week.
Yeah.
But I'm only ranking the teams that have played, because you're not going to get Pac-12 teams till November. I don't want to be putting up 5-0 teams or 6-0 teams against teams that haven't played yet. So I'm only ranking the teams that have played, because I have to see something from a team before I start to evaluate them. But we're already into, what, week 6 now, and you've got some teams that have played 1 or 2 games. It's tough. So in my rankings, you have a lot of teams that you're going to rise and fall very quickly week to week until it settles itself out by basically late November. You know, Mississippi State goes and beats LSU. I put Mississippi State top 5. I mean, I felt like they should be. That was the most impressive win of the season. But then they lose to Arkansas, and I got to bring them way back down. But I also move Arkansas way up after that, because it's only been 2 games. I try to base my evaluations on results, and that means a lot of fluctuation, a lot of volatility early. And, yeah, it's tough to evaluate teams after 1 game, 2 games. You usually need a year or 2 for this to play out. it's just going to take us to week nine or yeah. 10 before we kind of really get that sense.
And does the absence of those kind of kickoff classic games, the bigger ones that we had to throw away, do they matter? I mean, they're fun for fans, but in the end, is there a missing element to early season evaluation because of it, or conference games are really where we are anyway?
Yeah, it does. I mean, a lot of those non-conference games, you know, I think Alabama USC was supposed to play this year. Those are big opportunity games for teams, and we didn't get any of those. A lot of them, again, aren't doing non-conference games, or they're doing one or few. And so we have to evaluate them against themselves back and forth. And that becomes tough in a place like the SEC. Are they all good or are they all maybe not so good and they're just playing close against each other? We don't really know, and we're not going to know basically this year.
Yeah, we got some good matchups this weekend. Chris, thank you so much for your time. Chris Vanini joins us from The Athletic, talks some college football. Really appreciate your insight into some good matchups coming up this weekend.
Yep, should be a good weekend of football.
You got it. Thank you so much. We'll get you up with you down the road.
Yep, thanks for having me.
You got it. And again, Progressive Guest Line. Progressive proud again to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and some plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. As we continue along, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
We're going to leave you with the earworm of the day. I keep a close there you go. Right there, 1956. How great is that? Homefields, we want to tell you about them. Make great gifts. I know the holidays are coming, and a lot of you out there never know what you want. I got what you want. Don't you worry. Tony and Ron know what you want, and that's go to homefields.com. Beautiful three-dimensional pieces of art of your favorite stadiums, and they look fantastic. Have a beautiful, and it's a great talking piece, too. I've got Three Rivers Stadiums. They're lit up. Ron's got Dodger Stadium on the mantle for the postseason as a good luck charm. These make fantastic gifts. Go to homefields.com. You can find over 160 different stadiums and arenas that are available to look at. But when you see them online, remember, when they come to you, it's going to even look better because the three-dimensional effect is out of this world. It is fantastic. They look great. I love mine. I got mine sitting right next to the studio. It's a beautiful piece. And it's good, especially if you get in one of the older stadiums, maybe of your youth. It's not around anymore, some of the stadiums. Three Rivers Stadium was like an ashtray, right? It was like a standard 1970s stadium. But the memories in that place are amazing.
Kind of looked absolutely like an amazing ashtray, too. When you think about it.
Like that. It was like Three Rivers, Riverfront Stadium, Bush Stadium, like the old Bush Stadium.
Yeah, they all look. They all look the same. Yeah.
Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. They all look the same. They were these big, round, multi-purpose stadiums. But it's not the stadium; it's the memories. It's remembering as a kid watching games in Three Rivers, going, "Oh yeah."
If that's the case, is it safe to assume 50 years from now that every retractable roof that has a glass roof on it? It's going to be like, everyone that has
might,
that.
Maybe so. Maybe so, right?
Everyone has a glass roof. What's so special about that?
God, that's crazy. But again, go to homefields.com and check them out. Great, great stuff. I love mine.
I love it.
Yeah,
especially when it's lit up. It just looks so much better when it's lit up.
Really, I can't begin to stress that because I'll plug mine in and plug mine out. You know, I kind of want to save the lights. But
what's weird is the way it's designed, too, it lights up the inside of the stadium.
What makes it neat.
You can see the outside of it fine, but it's the inside, and that's exactly what a stadium will look like at night.
Yep.
You know, that's awesome. The facade is going to be dark, but the inside is just glowing.
How Ken Small did this, I have no idea. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So go to homefields.com and check them out. Don Larson's perfect game, 1956, as the Yankees beat the Dodgers. That was our throwback Thursday. Just a little bit of notes on that game. Mickey Mantle had a home run in that game. The Yankees would win 2-0. They had 5 hits. Obviously, the Dodgers were 27 up and 27 down. Sal Magley, the barber, was the pitcher for the Dodgers. He used to give you a close shave. That's why he's called the barber. Can you get away with that kind of nickname today?
Oh, of course. I think that one's still fine.
If you were a pitcher that was known to go really inside on somebody to give you a close shave, could you be nicknamed the barber?
Would they go, that's just so wrong
to be that kind of inside pitcher?
Now that you bring it up, do any Do any of the pitchers right now have a nickname?
That's a good point. That's a good question. Yeah. That's a good question.
Like, I can't think of one outside of, you know, in our time. I can't think of any pitcher outside of Greg Maddux right now.
That's true. That's right. So, nevertheless, that was the Throwback Thursday, and a good one. Because, look, perfect games are really rare. There's only been, a handful of them. There's not a lot of them. And one was thrown in the World Series, and we haven't seen that one since. Now, I did, in doing the little research on this game, that was brought out that in the 2016 NLCS, the Cubs, Kyle Hendricks and Aroldis Chapman combined for 27 up, 27 down, but they gave up a walk and two hits, but they got those batters out through double plays and a pickoff. So they faced 27 batters, but they didn't pitch a perfect game. This was a true perfect game in 1956, and we haven't had one in the World Series since. Because, again, perfect games are rare. We've had a number of no-hitters in the postseason, but we haven't had a perfect game. So Don Larson, congratulations. But we did want to reiterate that the great Vin Scully, who you can find on Twitter, as you probably know listening to this show, was calling that game as a young man back in 1956.
And we'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, because he might.
He's got to talk about it today.
He might tell a story about it.
I mean, the only other thing that happened on this day, which he might talk about, is 1957.
1957, the Dodgers left Brooklyn. Or it was,
so
yeah, so he might have that.
He's got to have two stories.
Today, on October 8th. Yeah, he might have to do it.
You got to do two tweets today. I'm sorry.
Vin, this is what we demand of you.
You owe us.
You owe us two stories on what it was like to be the Dodger broadcaster when they announced they were leaving Brooklyn. And what was it like to be the Dodger broadcaster witnessing amazing history as Don Larson, 27 up and 27 down, of every Brooklyn Dodger that came to the plate in the 1956 World Series Game 5. Jake Asman Show coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us as we continue along with the Sports Map Radio Network.